Here's the editor of Lenswork Publishing, Brooks Jensen.
In an admittedly oversimplistic way, I tend to divide the arena of fine art photography into two camps. I do this because it helps me think about what I'm doing creatively and what others have done creatively. And those two camps are, the first is destination or location is the thing. The big deal in that kind of photography is getting to the right destination, getting to the right locations, because choosing and then traveling to a specific destination or location is the only place that those photographs can be made. And so the magic is sort of in the destination or the location. That's camp number one. Camp number two is where photographs are all about ideas and our response to wherever we find ourselves and whatever we're looking at, and where some sort of connection, not necessarily with the place, but just as powerfully with our own internal motivations, with our own thinking, with our relationship with whatever we're photographing, even though it may not be a wonderful destination. That's the second camp. So destination / location compared to ideas / response / connection. Maybe the best way I can explain this is to consider two completely opposite photographers, at least opposite in this sense of how I'm dividing the world of fine art photography, and that's Ansel Adams versus Edward Weston. Ansel Adams was all about the location. Most of his great photographs are either in Yosemite or Owens Valley on the east side of the Sierras. He went to the spectacular place to make a spectacular photograph. His work, therefore, is mostly about the destination. Beautifully done, motivational, inspiring, lovely, etc. But relatively few of his terrific and particularly famous images are not in some spectacular destination location. Compare that to Edward Weston. Edward Weston did most of his famous work fairly close to where he lived. Matter of fact, an awful lot of it was done across the street in Point Lobos. And although Point Lobos has become a fascinating place for all of us photographers and the public to visit, his photographs are not spectacular because it's a breathtaking location. It's a pretty cool location. I've been there. But it's nothing compared to Yosemite or Yellowstone or some of the other places that are famous national parks and that are overrun with tourists every year. Point Lobos is sort of a nice little state park. And to illustrate how these two points of view can change the way we approach photography, I'll proceed with a little personal biography here. When I started photography, I was chasing Ansel Adams. That is to say, my 20s and 30s were what I consider my backpacking years. And a tremendous amount of my photography from those decades involved an 80-pound backpack of camping and photography gear, long hikes to arrive at some special location to photograph, a little mountain or a lake or some such thing, waterfall. And I can't help but look back at that now and think how much time I wasted by assuming that special locations are where great photographs are made. I began to have suspicions about this as the one and only way of thinking about photography, which in my youth, that was the one and only way I thought about photography. I became suspicious of that when I bought a book of Edward Weston's work. And it wasn't the work at Point Lobos that really got me thinking this way. It was Edward Weston's work in the Sierras. Evidently, as I recall, I hope I get this right because I'm not going to take the time to look it up. But as I recall, Edward Weston went up to the Sierras. Maybe he was with Ansel Adams. Maybe it was on his project of California in the West. But I vaguely remember that Ansel Adams took him up to the Sierras. And Edward Weston did some landscapes at Tenaya Lake or some such place beautiful mountains, beautiful lake, and his photographs are kind of dull. They're not very interesting. Edward Weston, I don't think, connected with the High Sierras in the same way that Ansel Adams connected with the High Sierras. And that was my first explosive idea that I thought, wait a minute, it's not about the location, it's about the photographer. Spectacular locations can be photographed badly, or at least not spectacularly. And Edward Weston's relative failures in the Sierras are what kind of got me onto this. I was blown away by his work at Point Lobos. I was blown away by his work in the desert. But his work in the High Sierras left me sort of shaking my head and saying, that's not his photographic turf, as it were. And that train of thought is what started to creep into all of my long hours backpacking out there with my heavy camera gear. Why am I doing this? And about the same time, I discovered Wynne Bullock and Aaron Siskind and later Joseph Sudek, all of whom made fantastic, wonderful, inspiring, earth-shattering photographs in their homes or in places that were not spectacular. In the case of Aaron Siskind, a lot of it was just trash that he found on the streets of New York. He made these wonderful, spectacular abstracts. Joseph Sudek was photographing in his house and in his yard and in his neighborhood. And what you might think are relatively mundane topics, like his lunch before he consumed it, but he made these spectacular photographs. The image that was so important to me from Wynne Bullock was Navigation Without Numbers, photographed in an abandoned house that had been domesticated by a young woman and her newborn. Not an important place, not an important model, not an important baby, not an important composition. But it was so emotively powerful that I thought, he didn't go off into the wonderful environs of Yosemite or Yellowstone. He went somewhere that the rest of us probably wouldn't ever think to go to make a photograph. So as that sort of a seed planted in my way of thinking, I started to become more and more aware where photographers went to make great images. And in being aware of that and thinking about that as I was looking at more and more photographers as the years went by, I ran across an image that Minor White made at Capitol Reef that's an abstract of dirt and rocks. And he didn't need to be in Capitol Reef to photograph that. Capitol Reef is a spectacular area, maybe not quite as popular or spectacular as Yosemite, but still breathtaking. It's a wonderful location. I've been there many times photographing. But when Minor White went to Capitol Reef, he photographed an abstract of a bunch of rocks by the side of the road. He didn't make a spectacular photograph of a spectacular place. He made a spectacular photograph of a place that he had a strong personal response to. The more I've thought about this, the more I realize that for me and my style of photography, and my suspicion is it's pretty good advice for everybody, that rather than chasing Ansel Adams, rather than chasing the destination location, the better photographs come when we pursue ideas or our own response to the world, and that we have a strong connection to some subject or some location. Now, that could also mean photographing a spectacular, beautiful place, but doing so in a way that's personal. I think of two photographers from Yosemite that we've published in Lenswork who illustrate this beautifully, and that's Franca Gobler and William Neal, both of whom have a very close relationship with Yosemite as a destination location, but their photographs are so personal. They're not chasing Ansel Adams. They're following their own vision, which happens to be a strong response to a particular location. Unless they told you, looking at the vast majority of their pictures, you'd never know they were from Yosemite. Their connection is with nature and with beauty, not with a national park or a highly photographed, iconic object like Half Dome or El Capitan or something. My proposal is that the best photographs come from your ideas, your response to the world, and your connection with what it is that you're photographing, both emotionally and intellectually, instantaneously and powerfully. It's those connections that are the heart of fine art photography. Let me take a little bit of a risk here and talking about an example that has become very prevalent in recent years, and that's Antarctica. Lots and lots and lots of photographers are doing these Antarctica exploration trips, adventure photography, exploration photography. They get on a boat and they go to Antarctica and they photograph the penguins and they photograph the icebergs. And we're sort of inundated by that. There must be hundreds of photographers who are paying big money for that exciting trip. I can understand it. It's got to be a spectacular place to go. But their connection with the place appears to be somewhat superficial. It's like what I did on my summer vacation kind of photography. Everybody's penguin photographs kind of look alike. Everybody's iceberg pictures kind of look alike. There's very little there that's a personal response or connection with the place that is unique and shows us Antarctica through their eyes, because everybody's photographing through everybody else's eyes. And so we get sort of inundated with the same kind of work. I've never been there, so I don't know. Maybe that's the great thing to photograph. Maybe there's an element of that other than just the adventure that I don't understand. But when I look at the photographs, without having had the benefit of visiting Antarctica and seeing what they're photographing, what I review in the submissions to Lenswork that come in, and there's been dozens of them, is pretty much the same thing. You can't tell one photographer from another. And in a couple of occasions where we could, those are the people we were happy to publish. Camille Seaman comes to mind. There are a few others. But most of that work that we review is pretty repetitive of everybody else who's been there. Because it's not a place that you can explore deeply. In the first place, you're only there for a few days during the course of a guided tour. And so it's not a place you can probably get to know very deeply. As a result of that, what a lot of people come back with are sort of the obvious pictures of the penguins and the icebergs. It's the photographers who explore a little more deeply and a little more personally that tend to make the best photographs. Thinking about this, I've come up with a few examples. My friend David Best was with me in Inner Mongolia years ago, and Leica had a big event that involved bringing in models who were dressed in Mongolian wedding gowns. They were absolutely spectacular. And there were probably, I don't know, maybe 100 or 150 photographers at this event. And every one of them was firing away with rapidity and burst mode to photograph these beautiful models in their beautiful garments. And there was my friend David, who had his camera pointed up at the ceiling and was making abstracts of the architecture and the skylights and the lighting fixtures. And he could have cared less about the Leica models and what everybody else was photographing. And that reminds me of a wonderful project that we did in Lenswork Extended number 81 by Cole Thompson. He got fascinated by looking at light fixtures in big hotels and restaurants that he was visiting that had nothing to do with photography. But when he looked at these light fixtures, they captivated him. He had a response to them that was visual and that showed his fascination with this relatively mundane subject. But he photographed it and photographed it and photographed it, and he kept working on it over a lengthy period of time and put together an absolutely mesmerizing collection of light fixtures, photographed from below. And he had to considerably underexpose them, because obviously they're light fixtures, so they would tend to be very, very bright. And by underexposing them, he was able to get detail in the light and make the backgrounds go essentially black. So they're just these gorgeous geometric shapes of tone and line and form and texture that are very, very captivating. And then there's a project that we did called Rorschach on Ice by photographer Joe Kolbel that appeared in Lenswork number 152. He photographed ice cubes from his refrigerator in macro. It's fascinating. Had nothing to do with destination. Had to do with his response, his connection. And by calling it Rorschach on Ice, there's an idea behind his images that motivates us to look at them in a certain way. And it was a spectacular project. And I suppose a lot less expensive than heading off to Antarctica. Sure, he didn't have the experience of Antarctica, but his photographs, to my eye, are way more interesting than a bunch of repetitive images of icebergs. Now, keep in mind, I mentioned earlier that I started off doing what I call chasing Ansel Adams. I thought maybe the world needed another Ansel Adams, as though one of them was not enough. And I thought maybe I was going to become the next great photographer, which, of course, was silly, because that wasn't what I was particularly interested in. I wasn't in a position to take advantage of some of the things that Ansel Adams had, for example, like living in Yosemite. So I tried to translate that Ansel Adams destination location idea into where I lived, which was in Portland, Oregon. And so I photographed Mount Hood, I photographed in the desert, I photographed down at the beach. But all of those were locations that were not as spectacular as Yellowstone, not as spectacular as Yosemite, not as spectacular as Glacier. They were nice, and I actually liked some of the photographs I made. But the ones that I tended to like were closer to the minor white experience in Capitol Reef than they were to the Ansel Adams experience at Half Dome. And the more I became conscious of this, the more I started thinking in terms of ideas, response, and connection. And that eventually led me to my book Made of Steel, which was photographing an idea and a connection to a certain group of people. But I did that project before I was really conscious of the distinction between thinking that destination slash location is the thing, and in comparison thinking that ideas, response, and connection is the thing. All of which has led me to two approaches in my photographic life that I think could be of interest for you to consider with your own work. First is, as I get older and hopefully wiser, I've come to realize that it's less useful and certainly less productive to look for a place to make a photograph than it is to look for a place with the potential for making a project, or perhaps several projects that have more than one photograph, maybe even lots of photographs. I call these target-rich locations. And like I say, often these target-rich locations can give rise to several small projects. A good example of this is the place that I visited in Florida last January. In my friend's home, I was able to develop three projects because it was a target-rich location. One of them called A Place to Read, which is about furniture and light and lamps and comfort and cozying up with a book. The second project was about stuff in their home, which I can describe as borderline hoarding. Fascinating stuff they had, but it was overwhelming, and I'm tentatively titling that project A Comfort and a Burden. And outside in their yard were these fantastic oak trees that became another idea for a project. Target-rich location. Three projects without even leaving their property. That's the kind of place that I now look for, is places where I know there's a richness of imagery that will allow me to think about a project. A number of years ago, I stopped at a state park in Idaho called the Cataldo Mission. And I knew there was going to be lots of things to photograph, both architecture and objects of devotion, etc. I ended up doing a project of a dozen images or so in an afternoon of photography that gave me not one image, but rather a small project, a dozen images called The Hands of God. Finding locations where I can make a great image is always fun. I don't avoid doing that. And sometimes a single image is all you need, so why push it any farther? But more often than not, I find a target-rich location presents me with enough variety that I can really do something interesting, that I can explore it a little more deeply, that both visually and conceptually, there's something that drives my curiosity. Those target-rich locations are the places that I really value now, way more than I value the spectacular location where so often what we're led to is photographs that look a lot like everybody else's photographs. The second approach that comes from this train of thought has to do with thinking about where we want to photograph. And I suppose I can best illustrate this by saying every year, in the early spring, right about now, I start thinking about where I might want to go this year to do some photography. And every year when I ask that question, I realize it's the wrong question, even though it just comes on naturally. I can't help but think about where I might want to go, but that's not the question I should be asking. The question I should be asking is, what ideas do I want to explore this year? What do I want to try to express visually in my photography? What kind of response or connection do I want to explore more deeply than maybe I would do with a surface photograph of just something that's pretty? So instead of asking, where do I want to go, I should be asking, what do I want to photograph? And what are the ideas that are percolating in me now that I might be able to express visually through my photography? It is so tempting this time of year to pull out the maps and start looking. And it's fun to do. But I remember in my youth, I would pull out a map and say, well, here's a mountain that I bet I could photograph, or here's a waterfall, or here's a spectacular land feature. And that's where I would head out. That's the sort of destination location mindset that I would have. I started drifting away from that style of photography when I recognized that just exploring and letting myself follow wherever my instincts told me to go always turned into something interesting to photograph, but almost never something that anybody else would think to photograph. Because those were the places, those were the images, those were the ideas that were bubbling up from within me. It was a response that I was having to the world. Instead of chasing off to photograph something that I had preconceived would make a good photograph, I found discovery to be way more interesting than planning. True, sometimes when you don't plan, you get snookered. But my experience has been, even when I get snookered and there isn't really fantastic photography that I was expecting, I'll probably find there's something very interesting to photograph that I wasn't expecting. And that's the whole point. Allowing ourselves to be open to what there is an incredibly more productive approach than setting out to fulfill a preconceived destination idea. They both have a purpose. They both can work, but for me, it's been much more productive, much more interesting, much more varied, much more exciting to pursue photography as a response to the world, as a connection to ideas or my deeper self or the thing I'm photographing or to history or to weather or to the moment, as compared to having that preconceived idea of how I want to photograph the spectacular place. There are two different approaches to photography. They're both valid. I think the question is, which of these approaches is the most productive for you personally the most satisfying for you personally, the most interesting, the most a reflection of your art life. And I think if we look past the surfaces, what we find is many, many, many of the great photographers in history have practiced photography as a response to what they find rather than as a purposeful acquisition that they've planned. When it's all said and done, it's about connection. And sometimes that connection is powerfully made by someone like Ansel Adams, who lived in Yosemite and connected so deeply with it, and that's reflected in his photographs. And sometimes it's reflected in someone like Joseph Sudek, who photographed the raindrops on his kitchen window. How is it that you connect to the world? And if we find that and pursue that artistically, I think we're much more likely to make interesting photographs, not only to ourselves, but to others.
Copyright 2024, Lenswork Publishing.